before then, Jack's forces will have mounted their attack. If it works, then you don't have anything to worry about.
And if it don't?
Then you're fucked.
Take us back to the Ville. If your people don't have much of a start on us, we might be able to catch up with them, bring Jack up to speed on what's going on. And if we tell the people you have left with you, then at least you can get them prepared to put up some kind of defense if the attack does come.
It ain't perfect, but it'll have to do. Come on, follow me. And I mean follow. I'm taking you on a shortcut.
The travelers followed the old man across the swamp. Having seen the speed with which the mud had claimed the rock the old man had tossed into it, they made sure that they followed Beausoleil's footsteps with extreme caution. He was following no path they had ever seen before, and it was a matter of minutes before they found themselves on the outskirts of the settlement. Word of their arrival spread quickly, and the old and children, the only ones left, gathered to hear what they had to say. Considering they were down to the bare bones, and they were facing the end unless they could intercept Jack's force and assist them, the few remaining villagers took the news with considerable fortitude. Under Beausoleil's command, they immediately began to make plans for the defense of their settlement, should it come to that. The old weren't afraid to die, and the young were perhaps too young to really comprehend what might happen. But the pragmatic manner in which they began to work said everything about why they had stuck out against Jean's regime for so long. In the meantime, Beausoleil left his people to their tasks and took the companions to the point where the rebel force had begun its journey to Lafayette. Beausoleil led them some way into the swamp and away from the settlement.
They came this way. They were gonna cut across the usual trails and make a more direct route. The idea was that by moving during the day, they wouldn't have to worry about the sect patrols until they were actually into West Lowellton. Moving quick enough, they should do that by sundown.
Having identified the trail taken by the rebel force, the old man left them to it, opting to return quickly to the settlement and assist in mounting a defense in case of the attack taking place. With no other words, he was gone. It soon became apparent why Beausoleil felt that his tracking skills weren't necessary for the companions. The trail was easy to follow. On his own, Jack would have left no trace, and they would have had no chance of following in his wake. Those who acted as sec, like Leroux and Prideaux, were adept at leaving little trace of the trails and paths that they used. But the force that had set out for Lafayette had left a trail that was obvious. It seemed that Jack had opted for speed over stealth, which wasn't like him. That he hadn't bothered about the trail they left in their wake suggested that he was having enough trouble controlling a force that was undisciplined and moving in many different directions. An army like that was never going to be easy to control. Jack was indeed having problems. His tactic had been simple. They had to move swiftly and attack with speed. That would prevent the members of the army arguing among themselves. And yet, he couldn't afford to risk splitting them up into small groups that could travel without being detected. If the plan had any chance of working at all, then he had to keep his force together. To move such a mass of people without leaving a trace was an immense risk, and one that he wouldn't have wished to undertake in the normal course of things. But he couldn't see that he had any choice. It rankled that they were leaving an easily traceable trail in their wake, but he could see no other way of getting them into position without any more internal disputes. By the time the sun had begun to sink, they had spent all day trekking through the swamp. The army marched in near silence, only a few daring to voice any thoughts, and those being almost whispers that died quickly for being ignored by the others. As the darkness fell, an air of nervousness began to sweep through the army. They knew that the sect patrols would be out before long, and they knew that a large force such as theirs would be easy to spot. Jack could feel the tension as it spread. By his reckoning, they were less than 500 yards from the edge of West Lowellton. Once they reached the old suburb, there would be plenty of places to hide from the outgoing patrols.
Keep a light. Nearly at the edge of the old Ville. Safe there.
Phew. Easy for him to say. Wish I felt the same way.
You starting to get a little nervous, maybe? We should stay at home with the women and children.
Listen, Stoop. There's a lot of women out there who have your balls for that. You'd have to be some kind of crazy not to get a little nervous. This ain't gonna be easy.
Leroux hated Prideaux, but hated him even more when the bastard seemed able to see inside his head and know that, for all the bravado, he was petrified with fear. As far as Leroux was concerned, a person would have to be a fool not to be scared of the odds. But he didn't want Prideaux to know. The rebel force had now reached the edge of the old city, and the stretch of barren ground that led from the swamp to the first crumbling remains of the old suburb. Jack divided his force into small groups of 6 and 7, sending them across to scuttle into the shadows of the ruined buildings, providing cover while they ran. He sent Marissa with the first group, trusting her to keep them together until the rebel army had gained the city. He moved in the last group, outpacing the other guerrillas as he sprinted across the open ground. He turned and watched the last of his group make the safety of darkness. In the distance, he could hear the rumble of the sekwags as they left the enclosure to take the old road out of the city and onto their regular patrol routes. Ushering them into the cover of the shadows surrounding the building debris, Jack waited while the sekwags drew near. The noise grew louder, and the tension he could feel rippling among the rebel army grew more and more taut. The wags went by, their men oblivious to the fighters waiting in the darkness. The last of the convoy went past and beyond them into the darkness of the swamp. There was a palpable release of tension among those in hiding.
Come on, let's get moving.
The relieved swamp dwellers stirred from their positions and began to move toward the old road, feeling safe now that the sec convoy had passed. Jack strained his hearing, trying to pinpoint something. He wanted to quiet the rebel force while he tried to work out what was disturbing him, making him feel uneasy, but it was too late for that. Under Marissa's direction, they had started to move out.
Wait! Go triple red, this!
Jack never got to finish.
Get to cover, now!
The sudden fire had paralyzed them, making them easy targets out in the open. Scrambling into the burned-out shell of an old shopfront, Jack headed for the rear immediately, skirting around the back of the old building until he came to an alley. Down the far end, out in the street, he could see another wagon. It had been part of the convoy, but had been delayed by a mechanical problem. The sec men who had been sitting in back had heard the rebels as they came out of hiding, and were now trying to pin them down with fire from their AK-47s and MP5s. There were 6 men, and they had positioned themselves in cover behind groupings of rubble or half-demolished walls. However, because of the angle they needed to get a clear shot, dictated by the bend in the road, they were leaving themselves exposed to an attack from the rear. 6 was too many for Jack to take on alone without driving some of them deeper into cover. There was already some return fire from the guerrillas to keep them pinned into position. Now Jack needed to go back and get a couple of other fighters to come with him and pick them off. Running, picking his way over the rubble at the rear of the old row of shop fronts, Jack returned to where the guerrillas were clustered. There were some on each side of the road, with a no-man's land between. Marissa was on the far side with about half the rebels. Prido was on this side, and Jack went to him.
Need you and LaRue to come with me. Go around back, hit him from behind, quick. None of them are covering each other.
I'm with you. Don't know where LaRue is, though.
Maybe he's on the other side.
I'll do it.
Claudine was Marissa's age, perhaps a little younger, and wielding a Lee Enfield like she knew what to do with it.
You sure, Claudine?
Better do that than stay here and get shot or die of boredom waiting for them to run out of ammo.
Good. We go now.
Jack looked across to where the other group of fighters was pinned down. He could see Marissa in the dim light and gestured to her that he was headed around the back of their opponents. She nodded and directed her soldiers to keep up a suppressing fire. If she could pin down the sec men, as they had tried to pin her people, then it would make Jack's task easier. Jack took Prido and Claudine out through the back of the old shop front, along to the alley. Silently, he led them as far toward the street as he dared, and indicated the positions of their attackers. There were the 6 men who had been in back of the wag, and the driver, who was huddled in his cab. He was frantically scrambling with some wiring in the dash, clearly visible through the open door, and Jack hoped that meant that any radio contact he might have had with the Ville had been broken. The sec men were concentrating on the rebels they had pinned. The driver was the only one to realize what was happening. He looked up from his dash and saw the 3 rebels in the alley. He opened his mouth to yell a warning, but got no further. The direction of the shot made the others turn, almost as one. But again, their reflexes were too slow. Claudine took the 2 nearest, sinking to one knee and ignoring her own lack of cover, concentrating instead on rattling off 2 accurate shots that drilled holes in their foreheads. Prideau took 2 who were at the edge of the bend, running and going into a forward roll to avoid the shots that kicked up dust around his feet, coming up firing. Jack went for the 2 who were farthest away. He figured that as leader he should take the biggest chances. It was a fraction of a second spent readjusting his position, but it was enough for the 2 sec men to turn and open fire on him. He used the side of the wag as cover, diving beneath and wriggling across the tarmac, His Colt Python raised enough to snap off a shot as soon as he could sight one of his opponents. It didn't hit home, but it did deflect the man's fire, his shot smacking into the boards on the side of the wag. Before the man had a chance to aim again, Jack took him out with a shot that hit him in the gut. Before the man was even dead, Jack had switched to the remaining sec man, who was lining him up. The sec man's fire went high and wide as he fell back, a single slug from Jack's magnum pistol tearing a hole in his throat and neck. The other insurgents, unaware that the threat was over, continued laying down suppressing fire.
Let's get back and shut them up. They're wasting ammo.
As they regained their original position, and the fact that they had been successful spread through the guerrilla force, Jack felt that there was a glimmer of hope. The rebels had stuck together and achieved their first victory. And in Claudine, he had found at least one more fighter in whom he could have some faith. The two groups came out of cover and came together again in the middle of the road.
Keep it triple alert now. Maybe others like that sec patrol out there.
Hey, we trash the bastards if they are.
No. Jack's right. We need to keep it cool and keep ourselves covered. We got caught too easily there. If it had been more than one wag, we would have been fucked. Maybe we should have a scout party going ahead, just two or three of us, to check the ways clear. Me and that stupid bastard LaRue can do that sort of shit in our sleep. Not much difference doing it in the Ville as opposed to the swamp.
Okay, you and LaRue. Where is he?
Huh? He was with us till the blasting started. Now he's gone? Oh, fuck it, I wouldn't have figured him as running scared.
LaRue was a fool. He knew he was. What he didn't know was what the hell had come over him. He'd been fighting all his life in the swamps, and blaster fire had never disturbed him before. But here, in the old Ville, he'd run. He didn't know why or where. He'd just taken off like a frightened rabbit. And now he had no idea where he was. Could he go back and find the others? They had to have noticed that he was gone by now. What would they have to say? Or would they just kill him then and there as a liability? He was completely lost, stumbling blindly from street to street, across roads littered with rubble and those that were completely clear, until he had no notion of where he was, where the walled Ville was, or where his team was. He could hear nothing but the blood pounding in his ears, the sound of his own terror. Perhaps this was why he didn't hear the sec-wag as it approached. Before his radio had shorted in the same electrical burnout that had killed his engine, the wag driver who had been killed earlier had got off a message to the walled section of Lafayette to send a replacement wag for the sec patrol and a mechanic. This was the wag that was now on its way, and its path was about to intersect with LaRue as he stumbled around a blind corner. He stumbled backward as the nearside fender of the wag caught him. His backward momentum saved him from being killed, as it meant he rolled with the force of the blow. He was saved further pain from the impact by a blow on the back of the head as he struck a piece of raised concrete on the old sidewalk.
He's coming to now.
LaRue heard the voice. It sounded as though it came from a distance, through a fog, distorted, not entirely real. LaRue opened his eyes. He was lying on the floor in a room lit only by candles. The floor was soft, covered by thick carpets. Everything was muted in oranges and purples. Huge chairs and sofas were scattered about, and an oak table covered in papers took the center of the room. The speaker had been a sentry, dressed in the dyed camo. He was about 50, with a slightly protruding gut and an MP5 holstered on his left side. He had scars on his chin and across his forehead, and his eyes were dark. They bore into LaRue.
Good. Let me talk to him.
A huge man hove into view. He was dark and leonine, with immensely powerful shoulders, dragging one leg with a limp. He was wearing a cloak and tunic, with leggings that disappeared into highly polished leather boots. His face was mottled with anger, and his eyes, too, bore the telltale signs of a heavy jolt user. LaRue lost control, soiling himself, as he realized where he had seen the man. He was in the presence of Dr. Jean himself.
I see you realized where you are. Now I want to know just who the hell you think you are. taking out a few of my men isn't going to do anything more than make me mad. You must be one of them swamp heathens. But you've turned all brave all of a sudden, haven't you? Still, it'd save me a task of rooting y'all out if you're coming to me to be chilled.
Dr. Jean pulled LaRue to his feet and then up off them, using his height and reach to dangle the smaller man.
Now listen to me, you sniveling, pathetic piece of filth. There must be a reason why you people have gotten brave and decided to attack, and I want to know why. And I want to know how many of you there are. I want to know just how you intend to get in, and I guess there's only one way to find out, ain't there?
Still holding LaRue at arm's length, Dr. Jean strode from the room, preceded by the sentry. They walked down a corridor and ascended three flights of stairs, lit by neon light. There was a guard at a door on each level, but not one even acknowledged that the Baron had passed, standing impassively. Dr. Jean carried LaRue, weeping and gibbering to himself, into a room whose door had been opened by the guard. Inside was an array of electrical equipment, and in the center of the room stood a chair with leather wrist and ankle straps. Dr. Jean flung LaRue into the chair, and the sec man deftly strapped the man's wrists and ankles before LaRue had a chance to object. At a gesture from the Baron, the sec man then took a knife and ripped LaRue's shirts and pants, pulling the material away so that he sat naked. Meanwhile, the Baron switched on a generator and tuned the knobs of an amp meter. LaRue was frightened, but confused. Red-hot pokers and blades he understood, but he had no experience of electricity. When Dr. Jean connected electrode clips to his genitals and nipples, LaRue had a notion that this would be nothing compared to the main event.
No, you don't have to do this. Look, I tell you, it's a stupid idea and it was never going to work anyway.
LaRue poured out all he knew, hoping it would be enough to save him. He told Dr. Jean about Jack and about the old sewer the wreck party had used, that the guerrillas would be using.
That's all it is. Now, please, I beg you, don't kill me. I could join you. I can see how wrong I was before.
Hoo-hoo, nice try. But you see, all you've done here is spoil my fun. I went to all the trouble of strapping you in. Now hand me that machete, Curly. Thank you. And I do so hate having my fun spoiled.